Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my business partner, who happens to be my co-host also. Al, what are you saying these days?
Well, always very excited to be on another podcast. Always look forward to speaking with our guests, and today is no exception. We've got, I think, a great guest, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, people think we do this podcast so that, you know, we can tease out clues so they can learn stuff, but our secret is Al and I really wanted to talk to this person so that we could learn.
Absolutely.
And as you'll find out, there's some reasons why, because I think we're going to tease out some really good clues today. So joining us today is Mark McLeod, a seasoned advisor and coach to high-growth CEOs who want to scale both themselves and their companies without limits. As the founder of Limitless.CEO, Mark leads an exclusive community for venture and private equity-backed CEOs navigating the complex challenges of leadership at scale. Over the past two decades, Mark has sat at the right hand of some of Canada's most successful tech founders as a CFO, venture capitalist, and dealmaker. He's served as CFO for Shopify, FreshBooks, and later became a general partner at Real Ventures, helping fuel the growth of Canada's startup ecosystem. His investments at Real Ventures delivered the firm's highest returns to date, a testament to his eye for leadership and potential. As founder of SurePath Capital Partners, Mark built the leading investment bank for SMB SaaS companies, advising on hundreds of millions in financing and exits. Today, through Limitless, he focuses on what he loves most, coaching CEOs to grow faster than their business, scale with purpose, and make bold, lasting impact. Outside the boardroom, well, Mark does a number of things, and we're hopefully going to dive into some of this, but he's a DJ and electronic music producer who brings the same intensity and discipline to not only the gym, the studio, as he does to the boardroom. Mark, so excited to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. You know, I was listening to that. I feel like there's a linear correlation between length of bio and age of guest. So I think the summary is I'm old.
Interesting.
Well, if they're seeing the clips, they might see a little gray on the sides of my hair as well. So, but with that comes wisdom, I always tell people, or at least that's what I believe. I want to talk about Limitless because it's when I got introduced to you, you know, I checked out your bio and your background. And I just thought, wow, this is someone who's doing some really cool stuff. And from my understanding, Mark, you founded Limitless to help CEOs scale without limits. But I'm wondering if we can dive into a little bit of, if you had to define that limitless mindset in one sentence, or it can be a couple, what would you say?
Yeah, we're really focused on two principles. One is putting the CEO first, like personally, prioritizing physical health, mental health, and if you're willing to go there, spiritual health, which creates more energy, more mental clarity, and more inspiration to then focus on the second pillar, which is unlocking revenue growth. You know, I work mostly with venture or private equity backed CEOs, and they have huge expectations on their shoulders. And often they've raised hundreds of millions in capital. And so they have this big obligation to create, you know, the next Shopify, whatever, big giant home runs. And the single biggest driver of valuation is the rate of revenue growth. And that revenue growth solves all problems. It's the magnet that attracts more capital, attracts ambitious talent, attracts customers who want to work with the market leader, and ultimately scares the crap out of strategic buyers who then want to buy you. So it's this two-pronged focus, putting yourself first so that you can have this maximum clarity and focus on revenue growth. And that putting yourself first is actually completely counter to the startup narrative, right? Which is this bro hustle culture, sleep when I die. I just, you know, use coffee to get through the day. I sacrifice health. I stop going to the gym because I don't have time or energy, even though that actually gives you time or gives you energy. And so I'm really trying to help folks unlearn and give them permission to put themselves first. And, you know, I've personally sold over $1 billion worth of companies. And the number one reason why founders choose to sell is because they burn out. And I would argue almost every founder, especially every venture-backed founder, is somewhere on the one-way path to burnout and living in chronic stress, fight or flight. And we've normalized it. We think actually that it's the badge of success. Like, it's normal for me to be feeling this way, right? And like, we compare all the time. Like, we compare the 100% we know about ourselves to the 5% we know about our competitors, and then think, I should be working harder. My competitor's working harder, right? And so again, just this fear mindset. Anyway, I'll stop because there's probably lots of ways we can go, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and you bring up a lot of, you're right, we could probably stick on this topic for the entire podcast, just in what you've laid out there. One of the things that I've seen over the last 29 years I've been in the business, you're absolutely right. People wear that as a badge of honor, that path to burnout. Like, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. That's what other people are doing. And I've got to keep up. But you said something really interesting to me. And it's something I've experienced a little later in my career. And that is, you said, if people are willing to go there on the spiritual side.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little more, and maybe from your own self journey, but also why is that one of your pillars? Because again, I can speak from my own experience. I've become more spiritual as time goes on, but I'd be curious to hear from your perspective.
Yeah. So for background, I started doing yoga in my 20s because women looked hot in Lululemon pants. So it doesn't matter why you start, as long as you start. And, you know, as a high charging finance exec at the time, didn't have a lot of balance. And I felt good, so I kept going. And then it eventually became a daily practice, so much so that I couldn't get to studios all the time. So I signed up for this thing called Yoga Glow, which is like Netflix for yoga, and would practice at home. And one day I came across this thing called Kundalini Yoga, which I'd never heard of. I tried it, and it was super weird, but I felt this level of peace afterwards that I've never felt in my life. Fast forward, I'm a Kundalini Yoga teacher. I've done the 200-hour, which is what all teachers do, and then a 300-hour, which is kind of to master. And yoga for me is not an hour on the mat. Yoga for me is a way of life. And I aspire to live all of my life as a practice. And when you read Yoga Sutras, which is the definitive text on yoga, asana, which is what we think of as yoga, right? Where you go to a studio and you get on a mat and you do these postures, is a tiny portion. It's actually only mentioned twice. And yoga is actually a system for living, right? There's yamas and niyamas are actually not dissimilar to the Ten Commandments. And so there's these eight limbs of yoga, asana being one of them, but kind of meditation, concentration, pranayama, which is access to life force. For what it's worth, I'm pretty sure that the force in Star Wars was based on pranayama. So that could be interesting. But suffice it to say, like, it's just taken on a bigger and bigger part of my life. And led me down a path to Buddhism. I took Buddhist vows in 2019. And what you've described, Robin, with your evolution, I think is universal, right? We are born as spirit. We are born enlightened, completely connected to source because we just came from it. And then we become separate along the way and get conditioned and have this separate identity. And this is me and you're not me and you're different and blah, blah, blah. And I think I can only speak from the male perspective, but I would say, like, in the first half of life, I certainly was out busy claiming what is mine, my title, my assets, my identity, my self-worth. And then in the second half of life, which I am squarely in, you start wondering why any of that matters. And you start coming back to more universal truths. And so I think everyone, whether they are conscious of it or not, some part of them recognizes, well, there's some bigger picture here. Like, I am not just this flesh and bones. Like, in all of creation, all of the universe, why are we here on this random planet, you know, and how is life? How is it that just the sun is at the right level to create photosynthesis, to create energy? All of life is based on the sun. So if you start to ponder these things, you can't help but become spiritual. And bringing this back to the startups, building a high growth company is a personal development and transformation journey disguised as a company, right? You cannot help but transform. And I don't know that my CEOs would use spiritual language, but the thing that I'm trying to create with these people, again, this goes back to the foundation, which is why I'm starting with physical health, right? This, the body is the container for the soul. We have to take care of it, feed it, exercise it, treat it like the amazing machine that it is. But like I say, most founders are abusing their bodies, abusing their minds, and therefore actually cutting themselves off from infinite potential. Like if you think about like the best performers, the Toby Luques of Shopify, the LeBron James is like the best athletes in sports, the virtuoso musicians. What do we say about them? We say they are inspired. Like that was an inspired performance. Look at that word inspired. What does it mean? In spirit. I am connected to spirit. Spirit is infinite. We all have this infinite potential. That's why some people achieve greatness, is because they access that. And anyway, there's this Western doctor, Dr. Joe Dispenza, who has kind of confirmed what the yogis have known for centuries, which is that most of us use a small fraction of our mind's potential. And these Kundalini practices in particular are designed to raise this thing called Kundalini energy and turn on dormant parts of your brain. And so I have lived this firsthand, you know, for a long time now. It's a daily part of my life. And so I'm trying to bring these practices to my CEOs so that they can unlock their potential. And where this shows up most is like most CEOs, again, they're all closed up. They're in fight or flight. It's like they use the language of war. I'm at war. It's a battle. It's a competition. There's winner, loser, zero sum game. Like that's where they're at. And energetically, they're cutting themselves off from accessing spirit. We are all just energy at the end of the day. If you were to take an atom and stick it under like, I don't know, super powerful microscope, you'd see that it's mostly empty space with energy moving around. So working on your energy really does unlock your potential because that's all we are. And what I have found to bring this back to practical terms is that when I am connected, when I have kind of raised my vibrations, I'm like, anyone who's watching is like tuned out, like this dude's a whack job. So anyway, when I raise my vibrations, everything becomes effortless. Like I think most founders, if I was to like watch a cartoon of most startup founders, they'd be thinking so hard that smoke is coming out of their brains, right? And I'm not saying you should just sit back at a spa and meditate and everything comes to you. Nothing worth doing is easy. But you can tap into intuition and inspiration with kind of these practices that I have my CEOs going through. You know, we just had 19 CEOs down for a retreat in Tulum, and it was a complete reset for them. And we had to get them to unlearn all of this bro hustle BS. And I could watch the unlocks happening. I could see the change in their energy. Anyway, I'll stop and see where you want to go because, again, there's a lot there. But yeah, that's what I have to say.
So there is a lot there. And there is a lot that we could talk about. But I really want to dig into a little bit of what you just said at the very beginning. And you said the very first thing that you do is you focus on, you know, the individual. How do you convince or how do you talk to these CEOs that you said, well, they've got a certain mindset, they're coming from a customary, like you use the badge of honor, mm-hmm. all this hard work. Like, how do you go about, what's your first step in saying, well, how about a little bit different approach? How about we put this first instead of that? I think that would be a big sell.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it is sharing my personal experience. I've been on both sides of burnout. You know, I ran that SurePath Capital that you mentioned that was a highly successful investment bank. We had obviously an office in Toronto where I was based. We had an office in San Francisco. We had clients in Europe. At our peak, we were doing 6 deals at a time. I still made time for physical fitness. I was doing CrossFit 4 days a week then. I'd say my spiritual practice suffered a bit. That's the only thing that kept me sane. But I still, even with those boundaries, still burnt out and still got divorced. And I firmly believe that everything happens in life for you, not to you. Doesn't necessarily feel like that way in the moment. But when you look back afterwards, you realize, oh, yeah, that was a gift. That was for me. Thank you. And I wouldn't be here talking to you today if that hadn't happened. I wouldn't be a coach. I wouldn't have created Limitless. I would just be a master of the universe, collecting these tombstone deals every time I close a deal and living unconsciously. And so I've been on both sides and I've seen the benefit of this other way. And if I were to graph kind of the evolution of my career and my impact over time, and on that same time axis, graph my commitment to spiritual practice and living yoga as a way of life, it's the same line. So I'm not just some Yahoo yoga teacher who's now trying to like sell spirituality to CEOs. I'm like a guy who's been a CFO, been a venture capitalist, been an investment banker. I've raised $1 billion for companies. I've sold $1 billion worth of companies. I coach some of the most ambitious CEOs in North America. Like there's a lot of credibility. And so people will listen and I just connect the dots and I just have them like a big job of a coach is to shine a mirror and like, hey, dude, here, this is what I'm seeing. You've been doing this hustle way. How is it serving you? How do you feel? When's the last time you actually truly experienced joy? Are you able to like sit with your children and not be thinking about work? When's the last time you truly honored your spouse and like were truly present with your spouse? You know, just keep asking these questions until like the penny drops and like, yeah, man, you're right.
I love that you shared some of those questions because I think it's going to make it, you know, easier for people to think about and reflect and see themselves. Was there, again, you've come from that high energy, stressful, was there a moment, was there an event, was there something that happened that made you click into the fact that, hey, this is the reason that I chose this other path instead of the traditional, just burn myself out?
It was the divorce for sure. I completely redesigned my life after that. That marriage ended January 2019. That was an 18-year relationship, 16-year marriage. We had a couple of kids. It was a big deal. But I had all the tools. I already had a spiritual practice. And you know, I had two close friends have their marriages end around the same time, and one drank his way through the pain, and the other slept his way through the pain. He would just have sex with anyone he could. And I did the opposite. I stopped drinking alcohol. I had a farm out in the country. And I would go there and just meditate and feel whatever I needed to feel. And I kept a journal for most of my adult life, something I recommend for everybody watching or listening, especially for CEOs. Like, we can get into it, but self-awareness is the superpower. It's the thing that enables CEOs to keep growing, and journaling promotes self-awareness. The bottom line is I did the work, right? Mm-hmm. I learned, I did the healing, the lessons, grew. And then in the course of rereading those years of journals, I often wrote about work because if I was awake, I was working. And there was this clear pattern where the days I was most excited about were days where I was having a one-on-one coaching or advisory conversation with a CEO. I was just like, oh man, I should just do this. That's what really lights me up. Forget this banking BS, you know, especially like all the compliance, right? We had an 88-page compliance manual. It's like awful. So I resolved at the end of 2019 to shut down my investment bank and become a coach. And then in March 2020, the universe served up this beautiful pandemic. And for a moment, companies stopped buying companies. And I was like, I had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of deals die in the space of 12 days. And that was it. That was my break. That was my clean opportunity to shut the firm down. And that's what I did.
That was your gift presented to you.
It sure was. I'm sorry that we're so many humans were affected by God's gift to me, but I took full advantage.
You know, Mark, I'm looking forward to actually future conversations, maybe on the podcast, but maybe outside as well. Because when I say you're a very unique person, and I mean that in a very complimentary way, because I think, you know, we're 275 episodes in now. And I think there are going to be a lot of people who listen to this episode say, oh, I haven't heard someone talk like this before, especially someone from your background. And I want to dive into that a little bit because your resume speaks for itself. You've been around the block, let's put it that way. You've seen and you're working with people on mindset and taking care of themselves, putting themselves first. From what you've seen over the years, what are the differences in mindsets from people that ultimately succeed on a large scale and those that just, to your point, go burn out trying?
Yeah, I mean, most burn out. 90% of startups fail. Naval Ravikant, who's a founder of AngelList, considered to be kind of one of the smartest dudes in Silicon Valley, he believes that startups die when founders run out of energy. I deeply believe that. The whole foundation of this limitless methodology is around energy maximization, again, physical, mental, and spiritual. Kundalini yoga is an energetic practice. So my life is based around harnessing and optimizing energy. So, you know, the folks who fail, it's because they lose energy. They lose physical energy because they're just abusing themselves, like, again, sacrificing sleep, sacrificing exercise, eating poorly. You know, most CEOs, they might just ram down some food in like their fourth Zoom meeting of the day. And if I were to ask them an hour later, hey, what'd you have for lunch? They have no clue, right? Which brings up the mental issue, which is they're not present. They're off reliving in the past or imagining the future and never here. And their brain is just going like crazy. And never stop to smell the roses. I started a daily gratitude practice in 2019. I did it for survival. It was in a pretty bad place when that marriage ended. I didn't end it. My ex did. Again, I can only speak from the male perspective, but as a dude, you can have three pillars to your identity, right? You're a husband if you're married. You're a father if you have kids. And then you have your purpose, your work purpose. And two of those three went away. I ceased to be a husband. I didn't cease to be a dad, but I didn't have my kids every day because I was still running an investment bank and it was planes, trains, and automobiles. So I went from seeing them all the time when I was home to like seeing them once a week for lunch. And I still had my purpose, but the point of all of this is I wasn't in a great place at the beginning, and I instinctually went to gratitude as a tool to help me get through those dark days. And what I discovered was that even on the darkest days, there's something to be grateful for. If nothing else, like, man, I made it through today, tomorrow is going to be easier. What I've found through now years of explicit gratitude practice is the more you are grateful for, the more you get to be grateful for. It's a virtuous cycle. And now I'm just hardwired for gratitude. And, you know, I experience the full range of emotions. I'm a human being. But generally speaking, my state is very positive. And I think most CEOs miss out on that, right? And it's because they have ambition, right? They have this vision. It's off in the future. How can I be happy? Like, I've got so far to go. Without ever recognizing how far they've come and the progress that they've made. And so I don't want folks to lose their edge. I don't want them to lose that ambition, but recognizing how far you've come fuels you, right? It gives you motivation. Like, a lot of folks just lose hope along the way. And by the way, that CEO who then recognizes, oh yeah, we've made some real progress, and then acknowledges that with their team, that's fuel for their team, right? Especially, ironically, the more demanding that CEO is, the more that praise works, right? So I'd say most folks don't tap into gratitude enough and just have no boundaries, right? The nature of work is it will expand to fill all available time. And what I've noticed for most of my CEOs is they give everything to work. They find something almost out of obligation for their kids if they have kids, and they have nothing left for their spouse. The overall divorce rate is 50%. I don't know what it is for entrepreneurs, but I'm sure it's way higher than that. And so, yeah, at a certain point, you're just on the deferred life plan, right? There's nothing feeding you, and you keep going and going until you hit a wall. Now, I had Toby Luque from Shopify on my podcast last year, and I asked him, I was like, dude, do you ever stop to smell the roses? Or are you always just focused on the next thing? And in a second, he answered, no, I'm focused on the next thing. So I don't want anyone to conclude like gratitude is the only way. I think it's a better way. I think it gives you all kinds of fuel. Toby, in some ways, has done it the hard way. But what has kept him going is that they win, right? They've been winning for a long time. They're the market leader, and winning creates energy. It creates momentum. And then also, he's completely in love with this problem. Like, the dude's a billionaire. He could just buy an island beside Richard Branson. He could race his cars because he's a professional race car driver. He doesn't have to work, but he works harder than ever, right? When I emailed him to ask him to come on the show, he responded to me at 4 a.m. It's because he's just completely fascinated with this problem. So that's like a really enduring source of motivation, right? When you just find this problem that you're in love with. And at the risk of getting woo-woo, but we've been super woo-woo already, so why not? Right? Like, I think everyone is here on this planet for a unique divine purpose. And if you connect to that, if you recognize, yeah, this is my unique gift, this is my dharma, this is why I'm here, that's an endless source of energy. Like, my entire career has been spent at the right hand of entrepreneurs. Like, I'm a CPA by training, but I never did Big Four. I worked at a regional firm. I worked with owner-managed businesses from day one. I've only ever worked with and for entrepreneurs. And my hope is to change those entrepreneurs' lives so that they can change the world, right? Because entrepreneurship changes our world. I've watched that happen many times over just in my career, you know? And so it's hard to think of something more motivating than that.
I just wanted to jump in there, Al, because there's just so much in every answer, Mark, that you're giving us. Like, we could go off a la Joe Rogan style and do a 4-hour podcast off of this. I mean, there's so much there. And I wanted to share with you, I think, I can't remember when we first met, if I shared with you where the title of the podcast came from, Success Leaves Clues. And I've told the story many times. My brother, who since passed away, he was 7 years older than me. I would sneak into his room and I wanted to be like him. So I'd listen to his Tony Robbins CDs, right? And the premise of Success Leaves Clues was find other people who are already successful, model their behaviors, their beliefs, and you'll reap similar rewards. And I thought that was a perfect name for the podcast, because like we're doing here today, we're teasing out a lot of those clues. But the other part you talked about that really resonates with me, and I think it resonates with Al as well, is the journaling part. Mm-hmm. And again, one of those things that I gleaned from Tony Robbins, I'm not fanboying Tony Robbins here, but I always loved the saying, if life is worth living, it's worth recording. Mm-hmm. Because it's great for not only us to go back and look at, hey, where was my mindset? Where was I at this point in time? But for future generations to say, hey, that's my dad or that's my uncle. Wow, that's who that was at that time. And look at the journey they had. The other thing I was going to ask you here is really purely selfish. And I'll tell you a funny story. So years ago, when Al and I first moved into our office that we've been in for quite a while now, a yoga studio opened up. And at the time, I was doing jujitsu 3-4 times a week. And jujitsu, although they call it the gentle art, it's kind of rough on the body. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly paying for it now. But I thought, oh, I'll add yoga and that'll help me. And Mark, I'll never forget going in and these middle-aged women around me are doing the poses and I am dripping sweat and I'm trembling and I couldn't do it. So I didn't go back to it. I left it, but it's always been on the back of my mind, especially post-jujitsu. I don't do any jujitsu now. I do hypertrophy training now, but I don't have that mobility. Where does someone like me go who carries a lot of muscle, but is super stiff and just yoga is pretty daunting at this point, right? Doing even downward dog is going to be a challenge. Like, how does someone like me who says, yes, I want to go down that spiritual path because I think it makes sense for who I am in my journey, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think that a couple of thoughts. One, we are only as old or as young as our spine. And so spinal mobility, which is a thing that yoga asana enables, is vitally important for everyone, right? The spinal fluid, the energy, we all have this dormant energy kind of at the base of our spine. And when we send it up through these yogic practices, this is Kundalini energy that I'm referring to. And actually, all yoga is designed to access Kundalini energy. It's just that Kundalini yoga is the most powerful example of that. But even just regular Hatha yoga or Vinyasa flow will do the same. But so important to have spinal mobility, right? You look at so many people in the modern world, what are they doing? They're crouched over their phone all the time. Like, they're just hunching, like their shoulders are forward. They can't breathe properly. Their necks. We need yoga for the spine. But yoga is not about how far you bend, at least not physically. It's about emotional flexibility, right? The purpose of yoga is to calm the fluctuations of the mind so that you can meditate. That's literally why it was created, right? To get the kinks out of the body, enable you to sit comfortably so you can focus on your breath and go inward. And man, I can't think of anything that we could use more in the modern world than the ability to sit with ourselves and go inward and just be and not have stimulation. So there is no pressure on you to be able to achieve any physical posture. The most important thing is that you're aligning movement with breath. And if you go down half of what those women go, that's fine. That's where you're at. But if you keep at it, you'll get more physical flexibility. But most importantly, you will start to breathe consciously. And the fastest way, the only way, in fact, to proactively down-regulate your nervous system is conscious breath. All other aspects of the nervous system are automatic. They're invisible to us. The only thing we can do to either elevate our state or down-regulate our state is conscious breath. And so yoga practice gives you those tools.
Mark, I've been really impressed with your wisdom that you've shared. We've had a lot of conversations that we probably haven't had before on this podcast. One thing, though, that I think I'm most impressed by is your openness to some of the struggles you've gone through, because some of the stuff you shared, obviously pretty personal. And I'm just curious, is that something that was always a part of you? Or is that something that you've had to work on as well and get comfortable with?
It's a good question. I started blogging in 2007. You can't tell from my accent, but I lived in Scotland until I was 11 and survived 6 years of British grammar school and was just like fed the classics over. Anyway, so like I'm a fan of the written word. And I found that the process of writing, like I learn through writing, it clarifies my thinking, like I learn from it. And when I look back, all of my most important business relationships have come from people reading what I write. And so it's just led to this natural evolution where I would share kind of the highs and lows, you know? And certainly, it's funny, like I didn't connect the dots till afterwards, but I think in some ways I've always been a coach, right? Just with different titles and business models. But it was kind of the role that I played with my CEOs when I was a CFO. As a VC, I was trying to help founders become great CEOs. As a banker, there's a huge kind of psychological aspect to, especially the decision to sell your company. And so it was like combination therapist and deal maker. And then, of course, now I've been a coach for 6 years. And I just found it wasn't an artificial thing, but by me being completely open, it encourages my CEOs to be completely open. I actually think for coaching in particular, I was intuitively drawn to coaching and I bought my first coaching book in 2002, but concluded that I lacked the gray hair or moral authority to really be credible and kind of kept grinding for a while. But I think there's some benefit to being older, right? I'm older than all of my clients by a lot. Some clients could be my children. So it's really helpful for them to know, okay, yeah, this dude's been around the block and he's seen it and he's not just regurgitating something he read. And you use that word wisdom, right? The difference between knowledge and wisdom is like wisdom is something that you've lived. It's a lived experience, you know? And so, yeah, I'm just sharing everything I've learned along the way, you know?
Al, what would you say the chances are pretty good that Mark has a good answer to your signature question? I have a feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel some pressure now.
No pressure. The question we always ask and always look forward to, and always look forward to hearing what people's feedback is on it. Societies grow great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees you might be planting? And it may be from your professional background, but it could even be from what you're doing with your family, what you're doing with your community, however you want to approach that.
Great question. Well, obviously trying to be a great, you know, role model for my children. They're in their 20s now. I think at some point you cease to be a parent, even though you're always technically a parent, and you become kind of a friend and mentor. So hopefully just, I don't know, instilling some of these values and lessons into them, and then they'll take it to another level. This unlearning that I referred to of bro hustle culture That's a big deal because it's so ingrained in society, right? We celebrate busyness. You catch up with someone you haven't seen in a while. Like, how are you? Like, oh, I'm so busy. I'm like, yeah, me too. I'm so busy. It's like we don't feel valued unless we can say we're busy. And so I'm under no illusions, right? Like, I deeply believe that there's a better way, a way that almost feels effortless and where you can tap into inspiration and this limitless potential. But it's a huge task, right? If I were to walk into, I don't know, Y Combinator demo day and try and convince these people that this is the better way, like, they'd think I was a lunatic. But I want to kind of, I guess, plant that seed and have some examples, right? By the time I kind of hang up my shingle and stop working and just go meditate in a 4-star cave all the time, I want to be like this movement, right? There's some snowball that's going down the hill of folks who are on this limitless path, and like, it keeps going and it's way bigger than me. Like, I don't want this thing to be the Mark McLeod show. That's why it's called something else. I want there to be other folks who are proponents of it. And I'm just kind of there more in the background, you know, and watching hopefully this movement take off. So I would love that.
Well, Mark, I think some of the stuff you've shared today, I hope people are going to cue into some of the norms that you've challenged, you know, talking about competition versus collaboration and talking about putting yourself first versus just putting your nose to the grindstone. It really is a little bit of a mindset shift. And I hope that some people will at least take some tidbits away and maybe reflect on some of these things and say, yeah, you know what? Maybe there is a little bit different way to approach things than that traditional norm.
Yeah. If I could offer up two very quick practices for your listeners. One is to prioritize sleep. Today's performance began last night. Sleep is the number one performance hack, although it's anything but a hack.
I like that.
If you make sleep a priority and become a professional sleeper, your life will change. And then the other is just, yeah, journaling to promote self-awareness. And if just taking out a book and writing free form is intimidating, pick up this thing called the 5-minute journal. As the title implies, it takes 5 minutes. It's actually quite focused on cues. It's got specific questions that you just fill in, and some of them are around gratitude. So it's a really powerful tool.
I'm going to look into that today. Mark, you know, one of the greatest things and surprises, quite frankly, because I've told people the podcast was a branding exercise in the beginning, and then it morphed into something completely different. And it's been such a wonderful way to connect with people and meet new people with different perspectives. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm hoping we have more in the future. And you and I were introduced by another person that I had on the podcast who, again, has turned into a friend. And we've had so many great conversations. And that's Karis Goodall. So Karis,
yes,
thank you so much for this intro. Mark, for listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, so Limitless is at limitless.ceo. So that's the program and community that I'm building. It's in the early stages, but yeah, there's all the information is there. I post online 6 days a week on LinkedIn. So searching Mark McLeod on LinkedIn. And I have a newsletter. And from my LinkedIn bio, there's a link to a newsletter that goes out every week. And then I have this podcast called The Startup CEO Show, where we do an episode every 2 weeks.
Awesome. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here very clearly today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.